Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Devin McCoy, and this is the Dirt Bike Journals. Hey everyone. Dang, today's episode was wild. We had all kinds of stuff going on. First, we started out with a little bit of hail, then came lightning and thunder, then a train rumbled by. It was pretty interesting to say the least. Also, Kyle is one hell of a dude. His ambition from a young age to pursue his passion and his dream is really something to be admired. Kyle's the live promotion specialist for Rocky Mountain ATV MC. In simpler terms, he's the event manager. Anywhere you see Rocky Mountain at an event, he's in charge. This is a huge responsibility and Kyle manages it well. Now, he won't like me talking him up, so we'll go ahead and let him tell his story.
Kyle, how do you say your last name?
Yaple.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
When Siri was like, call from Kyle, Yaple. I was like, that's not
right. I'm surprised it didn't say Sile.
Oh, yeah.
My first name's with a C.
I wonder if it's because it heard me say your name. Dude, they're always listening.
Smarter than my truck, I swear.
Well, Kyle, thanks for coming on the Dirt Bike Journals. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
So, Kyle, how would you describe who you are as in relation to your work? What do you do?
Oh, man. Just like everybody else who has seen a motorcycle and caught the bug, you know? Like, I'm a total enthusiast. Basically, my entire life has revolved around the motorcycle industry for as long as I could throw a leg over the bike. So
cool.
It's been good.
So when we were talking earlier, you were working for Feld. That was in all moto-related stuff.
Yeah, and before Feld, when I was in college, what really got my foot in the door was MX Sports and Racer Productions. They basically run an office out of Morgantown, West Virginia, and they manage GNCC. They do a partnership with Pro Motocross, like the Nationals and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they run Loretta Lynn's. What else do they do? I think that's pretty much it. It's been a while since I've worked there, but they have the other branch of Racer Productions is the magazine Racer X, mm-hmm. which pretty much everybody in the industry is familiar with.
Yeah.
But yeah, that process was pretty eye-opening for sure. It was a lot of swinging sledgehammers and putting tents and signage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild. You know, you see it on TV and you're like, wow, this big spectacular thing, that's awesome. Like, I want to do that someday. But you don't understand how much work and sweat and
blood goes into behind the scenes stuff.
Oh my gosh, it's wild. And they do an amazing job. They've been basically around for 55 years or so. So they
know what they're doing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Cool. So let's back up to your childhood when you started. How did you get introduced to dirt bikes and then all the way through until you were actually working in the industry? Let's hear about all that.
Yeah, so I actually lived in this town. It was very small. Most people owned a camp in this town. I don't even know how to describe it. It's called Mayfield in Pennsylvania, and most people owned little camps there instead of homes. I lived there.
Are we talking like tents, like canvas tents or something?
Not camps, just like cottages.
That's what they call them.
Yeah, little houses and stuff, you know, just to like vacation to in the summer. Or
okay.
Very poor neighborhood, you know, but that's kind of where I grew up and found motorcycles. Just from the kids down the street, they would always bring their dirt bikes to their grandparents' house, which they had a camp down there.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes their family would come and they'd bring bikes too. And I would hang out with them and then, you know, their family would come down, they'd all have bikes, and I was stuck on my bicycle. And I was like, bro, what the heck? Like, they get to go have fun on these dirt bikes. I'm like, I need one, like whatever it costs. I want a bike. And I'm, you know, 6-7 years old. You know, but I saw that and I'm like, I need a dirt bike.
And all these kids are on like 50s, 80s,
yeah,
110s,
man,
and stuff.
I can't remember. I mean, the one kid, I can't remember his name, but he was about the age that I was, or maybe a little bit older. And his brother was probably 5 or 6 years older.
Mm.
But yeah, so mid-sized bikes, you know, beginner bikes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when they would take off, it was like mesmerizing, you know. It's like, yeah. I have to pedal everywhere, and you're telling me I could throw a leg over those and go explore the mountains and stuff.
Yeah,
it's like done deal.
Just twist your wrist a little bit,
yeah,
and go.
Exactly. Yeah, the bike does all the work, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw that, and I'm like, I need a dirt bike. So I talked to my mom, and she came up with the idea of me collecting people's cans and crushing cans to then scrap the cans, yeah, for money. So that's what I did for a summer and a half, was crush cans and bag them up in heavy-duty Glad bags.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably made $100. Yeah. You know what I mean? But my mom matched me $200, and I actually bought one of the older dirt bikes that this family had, which was a 1985 Honda Z50.
And, cool.
Yeah. Which I didn't care at the time.
At the time, it was
but
rad.
It's like a cult following now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my first bike. And I didn't really know anything about it. But, yeah, it ran. And basically, that was me every day since that.
Yeah.
You know? It sucked because I got it for Christmas, so I had to wait.
Oh,
until
shoot.
The snow was gone.
Yeah. Even in Pennsylvania, there's snow and it's cold.
It sucked. Looking at that thing every day, I would just sit on it and be like, oh, come on. Like, No.
That would be hard.
Yeah, it was tough. But yeah.
So what did you progress into? What was the rest?
Yeah, so you know, that being my first bike, I had that probably until I was way too big for it.
Mm-hmm.
We moved up north where most of my family was from, and then
further north than Pennsylvania.
Further north from where I was living.
Oh, okay.
It was about an hour, 2 hours south of, you know, where most of my family was in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, from there, you know, my uncle, he's kind of the driving factor of why I stuck with motorcycles.
Your uncle?
My uncle, yeah. He's been around them, you know, when he was a kid. He wasn't, like, hardcore into them or anything. His buddies all, you know, rode. One buddy kind of went off and raced and did some more things like that. But he started racing sport bikes. And so I would go to the races and watch him, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is awesome. That kind of like enforced my already like love for motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
He helped me basically buy every dirt bike I've owned since then.
That's
so like
cool.
We picked up an 85, and then from there it was an XR100, just weird like oddball bikes, like no real race bikes until I was about, I would have to say I was about 16, 17, I bought my first like YZ125, and that was my first like motocross like fast bike.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, actually had some power.
That's cool.
But yeah, he was kind of the driving force of like why I was really, really starting to get involved with motorcycles.
You still talk to him much?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He doesn't really mess around with motorcycles anymore.
Mm.
He raced for a while and then kinda got out of it. He's more into like boats and stuff now.
Oh, okay.
Which, I know. Hey. It's another good hobby to have, I guess. A little bit more chill.
Do you hear that rumbling?
I think it's a train.
Is it?
Yeah.
Jeez, are they that loud around
here? Oh, yeah, look, way over there.
Oh, yeah, holy crap, that guy's flying.
Yeah. Man, it started to hail on us. There's a train. I don't know what this is going to sound like, but whatever. It'll be
That's
cool.
Right.
So you get that YZ125. And you say you're more of a moto guy. You're not so much hard enduro kind of stuff.
No.
So did you have tracks around you that you could go to?
Yeah, Pennsylvania was kind of tough for any kind of trail ride or anything. There wasn't really any hard enduro.
It's either a park or a track.
Yeah, most things on the East Coast are protected.
Yeah.
So it's hard to find really anywhere but a track, you know. Yeah. We had the Allegheny National Forest next to us.
I heard a lot about that.
I unfortunately never really got to go and ride the Allegheny, but you know, most of my friends had very large properties and stuff. They would go and ride at their house, make little tracks, jumps, whatever. I had a friend in high school. His parents actually built him a track on their property, like a legit track. Had a guy on a dozer push some stuff.
No way.
Yeah, so that was pretty nice. We'd go over there a lot, but yeah, there's plenty of tracks around us. I didn't get to touch a whole lot of different tracks, unfortunately. just our financial situation, it was hard, you know. Yeah. But yeah, basically anytime I could touch the bike or go out to someone's property and ride, I was doing it.
You're on it.
Yeah.
That's good. Cool.
So
when did you start working for Feld?
So after college, well, I should say during college, I was working for MX Sports and Racer Productions for about 3 summers.
How'd you get hooked up with them?
So I needed to take an internship in college. Mm-hmm. My junior year, they wanted practical experience in whatever sport industry, because I was studying sport management. So I'm like, dang, all these people have, I went to school around Pittsburgh. They have all these stick and ball sports around Pittsburgh. And I'm like the only dude into motorsport. it was wild. That whole experience. I was literally the only kid in my entire class that was like, yeah, motorsports are awesome. Everybody else is like basketball, football, baseball. Yeah. So it was weird.
Well,
like,
I mean,
me turning in papers and stuff about, you know, Jeremy McGrath or Ricky Carmichael or Evel Knievel and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, who are these people?
That's so cool. You wrote a paper about those guys.
Yeah, no one could fathom. Yeah, I had to have practical experience with them. So I worked for them for 3 summers. And then after college.
Like an unpaid internship?
Yeah, well, it was an internship while I was in school. When I was out of school working for them, it was paid.
Okay.
Internships are so stupid. I still can't believe it's like slave labor.
Yeah,
it doesn't
right.
make any sense. But so I did get paid with them during the summers and stuff. So I was lucky enough that my uncle had really good family friends, the Mueys, who were already involved in the industry.
Yeah.
So they worked their way up through pro motocross and different jobs to get to the supercross level, which is like the mecca,
yeah.
I feel like, for really anyone.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough where I had an in a sense, you know. They still wanted me to obviously like work my way up and pay my dues, that way I could get some industry knowledge. But when college was ending, I basically hit them up and said, hey, like, I'm willing to move. I'm willing to do whatever I need to do basically to make it down there and work for Feld, for the Supercross division. And I packed up all my stuff and moved down to Florida. I didn't know anybody, you know.
Jeez.
Basically, when I was interviewing them, I met a really good friend of mine now, but at the time I didn't know her. Her name is Jen Shepherd, and she basically said, like, hey, I need a roommate. So roomed up with her. It just kind of worked out.
Yeah.
She's awesome. Tell you what, if you ever have the chance to ride with her, I'm sure she'll be down to Utah eventually. But
cool.
She is one fast chick.
Yeah.
She wins about everything she touches. She rides Dang. With the boys all the time. She's quick.
That's pretty cool.
So that's kind of like my transition down there was just kind of like I knew that's where I wanted to be, and I made sure like it's going to happen regardless.
Yeah.
You know? So
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And to have people like that just kind of fall in your lap.
It was wild because it was like my dream job in a sense, but at the same time, like outside of work, I knew no one. I didn't have any hobbies or really anything to do. Like, I'm a pretty active dude, so like I explored on my own and did things. But it was just like, all right, now what?
I'm
home.
All on my own.
Yeah, a lot of calls home, that's for sure.
Yeah. But, holy crap.
Jeez.
It's going to be loud.
Hail and lightning, thunder. Ooh.
Yeah, that was loud. Holy, that shook the truck.
Dang.
Jeez, I mean, it said thunder showers, but I wasn't actually expecting it.
Well,
that was cool.
Hopefully this turns out.
This is going to turn out rad.
If we got to do it again, I'll do it again.
No way. This is going to be perfect. I don't know what the hail's going to sound like.
I should have said something really cool right there.
Yeah. Anyway, you're working for Feld. You go down to Florida, right?
Yep.
Is where you're at. What were your living conditions like? I mean, so you had a roommate, so you guys were at least in a decent
place. It was good.
Place.
It was wild to me because where I'm from in Pennsylvania, like, the cost of living is, like, dirt cheap, you know?
Oh, Jesus.
But going down to Florida, like, on the Gulf Coast, like, St. Petersburg area, Sarasota, it's all retired people and, you know what I mean? Like, everything's nice for the most part, I should say.
Yeah.
There's always going to be bad parts of town. But, no, it was good. Like, we had you know, 2,300 square foot house, backyard, garage.
Just the two of you?
I had another roommate.
Okay.
I won't mention him.
Okay.
He was on the rough side. But
didn't always pay the rent.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, it's more... there was some wild stuff that went on.
All right.
He's just not a good dude. Not a good dude. But, funny. Yeah, no, we had a great space.
That's good.
Sucked the HOA. Maybe get rid of my bike trailer, you know, because it looked ugly.
Because of the way it looks. I hate that stuff.
I'm surprised they didn't raise halcyon dirt bikes in the garage, but whatever. The space was good. I didn't have a dirt bike, actually. From the time I graduated high school to basically what I was telling you, I'm picking up a WR this weekend until now.
What?
Yeah, so I've been without a bike just because I've been traveling around chasing a dream.
But you've been chasing the dream that revolves around two wheels.
Trust me, it sucked.
That's heartbreaking. I'm sorry.
I know, dude. Try going to like pro motocross and everybody you work with rides.
Yeah.
Watching the pros ride and you're getting to know the pros and like people involved in the industry and you don't have a bike. Like,
yeah, that's rough. Dude,
I just didn't have a space to keep it.
Yeah.
I didn't have the means. Like, I was constantly traveling, you know? So it's just like, even if I had a bike, I was gone all the time. Mm-hmm. I can't ride. But yeah, it sucks. So I bit the bullet when I was down in Florida. Basically everywhere you got to drive 2.5 hours, to ride. And it's just hot as shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hot. And I'm like, I'm like, what makes sense? I'm like, I could buy something I commute on, so I ended up buying a sport bike.
Okay.
And the sport bike was fun, but after riding it for a while, it's like anybody, they just push it and push it and push it. And it's either like you end up dead or end up in jail.
Yeah.
So I scrapped that pretty fast,
I feel like, for the most part.
Yeah. So got rid of that. But then, yeah, like I said, I was on the road mostly with Feld for the Supercross races. But
on the road, just... every stop they make.
18 weeks straight is basically a season.
So what do you do in the off season?
Work in the office. So
okay.
What I was originally hired for was paddock manager. So I designed like all the paddock layouts. So any of the pit party stuff, mm-hmm. AutoCAD, just moving stuff around, making it work, calling different fencing companies, Port-a-Johns, everything involved that is outside the stadium, basically.
So were you, like, the head of all that stuff?
No,
you have people that you work with?
No, shoot, I was a peon.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at the low bar.
But even then, I mean, you're organizing and doing a whole bunch of stuff.
The coolest thing was, like, the first week I was working there, they're like, hey, here's all the contacts for the pro teams. So I still have contacts from, like, Mitch Payton, the Alessis, like, DeCoster, you know. And seeing that for the first time, I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I have Mitch Payton's cell phone number in my phone. I'm like,
that'd be so cool. Doesn't make any sense.
So just setting up, like, different things that they needed with their team contracts, sending out paperwork. It's actually pretty boring stuff, but... I didn't do that for very long. Actually, I went to a motorcycle dealership after that. It took like about 2 years. I worked there just selling dirt bikes, boats, skis, stuff like that.
That work out okay for you, or was it kind of scrappy?
It was okay. Yeah, it was hard. You know, I'm a better salesman now, but at the time I was not a very good salesman.
Yeah,
it's hard watching, like, one of my best friends. I met him at the dealership at Barney's, and he's like one of the best salesmen I've ever seen in my life. It's not like one of those guys where it's like, you know, this guy is trying to like just take all my money and doesn't care. Like, he's genuinely a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
And watching him sell 27 units when I sell like 5 in a month is like I'm like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah,
show me your ways. Yeah, that got really old really fast.
I can imagine.
Feld wanted me to do this SXVR, it's called, after that.
What's that mean?
Which is, it's like a supercross virtual reality. So they have a full-on dirt bike, full-size 450, on like a spring and a platform.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, maybe you've seen it before at the races, but then you put a headset on, and it's like it's not really like super interactive, but it gets like people who don't know about the sport.
Yeah,
like gives them a really good opportunity to see what like the racers.
And does it react and everything according to how much you twist?
No, I'm sure it's better now if they're still doing it. Yeah. But no, it was
not a real accurate representation.
It's pretty much a video in your eyes, you know, showing you like a GoPro footage, you know, in the helmet of like what the racer is going through.
Okay.
And then you make the bike move. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was still cool. Don't get me wrong.
Like, yeah, that's fun.
But
my kids would have a blast on that.
So I would take that to all the news stations and basically the cities that Supercross is being held. And we would have like a talking head, basically stand next to the bike, get a newscaster on the bike and try to sell tickets. Basically like, hey, this is what Supercross is all about. You know, the news reactor or news person gets to react and be like, hey, wow, this is awesome. You know, you need to get down there. So I did that for about a year and a half. At the same time, when I was touring, I was with a company called Legends and Heroes, and they run a motorcycle museum. Alex Moros, John Tilton, and Carol Moros. So they bring all these vintage bikes to the Supercross races, which is awesome. Like I really wasn't into vintage stuff until like I started working with them and seeing like how rad like everything started, like how crappy the suspension
was on it. It was
nitty gritty
stuff.
Yeah, and seeing videos of like dudes like Bob Hanna and stuff just tear it up and just ruin everybody. Yeah, that was super cool. So I was doing the SXVR thing, and then when Supercross was going on, I was with them running the Supercross VR section while they showed the bikes and
stuff. That's fun.
It was cool.
Man.
It was really cool.
That would be super rewarding.
That was a really long-winded answer for what you just
what
asked.
What do you do?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, that's really cool to hear about all that stuff behind the scenes, because a lot of us, you know, we just see the production. Sure. We just see whatever the cameras show us, but there's like, you know, it's an iceberg. There's a little bit that you see, but down below there's just so much more stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah, it was
wild. You have no idea.
Yep, like probably the biggest project, I would say, is Loretta's. When I worked for MX Sports, we're down there for a month and a half, and my job was basically setting up everything around the track. So all the signage, all the, there were 750 hay bales. You have to wrap 750 hay bales.
Did you have like a machine that helped you? Or you just like roll them over, staple them?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's pretty much what it was. I had like 3 to 4 laborers, like local guys that would come out and help. But yeah, man, 112 degrees for a month and a half, just beating stakes in the ground and stuff. And now, you know, I'm in a nice office most of the time, or like sitting behind a booth somewhere in California. But yeah, it's a good reminder for sure.
Yeah, where you been and what you got. So when did you leave Feld?
So I left in 2019.
Okay. So just before COVID.
Yeah. So basically towards the end of the Supercross season, I'm like, well, crap. I really like it out west. I've been traveling in the Sprinter van all over the country at each Supercross round. And I always would basically stop in Utah and be like, spend an extra day or two. And it's like, this place is freaking sweet. And
I'm like, different.
Rocky Mountain's out here. I'm like, I bet you I could talk to Rocky Mountain. And
back then, you were working with them as a sponsor, putting their stuff out on the track, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, they had some signage and stuff, but I didn't really think of it, you know? I didn't really think of it until I started traveling with Supercross. Like, hey, there's other places in the industry where you can be.
Yeah.
So, Ray Butts, he used to work here. Ray has basically been the face of Rocky Mountain since it was born, you know what I mean? He's chief of operations, or at least he was. Ray's kind of the guy who set this gig up for me. I knew of Ray through MX Sports and working around him. But, you know, I approached him at Denver Supercross and just told him, I'm like, hey, look, you know, I'm looking for a job. This is what I want to do for your company. I want to put on all your activation events and stuff. I want to, you know, make sure you guys are seen outside of, you know, the website. Most people are just like, It's a website.
That's it.
There's no face-to-face interaction. So, yeah, Ray's really the one who made it happen. He's just like, yeah, we're going to do this for you. And
so did they have a department like that before?
No.
So you helped them create it?
He said he was talking about it. You know, there was talk of creating a department like that. But this kind of, I think, was the kick in the ass to actually create the department, which was good. So, yeah, I'm the first of the department, I guess, as of right now.
Yeah.
We'll see, but...
Yeah, so you have the most experience in doing it because of your stuff with Fel.
Yeah, it's
that's pretty valuable.
It's been challenging because, you know, I have all this outside of experience, but with Rocky Mountain, there's so many things that obviously they want to do right. So it's got to pass through a lot of different people to get like little decisions and stuff done, which ultimately is a good thing, you know.
Yeah,
they put out a good product, and that's what. Yep. Obviously people want to see. So.
Yeah, I understand that. Sometimes you have those corporate rules for a reason. They seem tedious, but
that's good now.
More eyes on a project.
It was just hard at first, you know, like having a vision in your head of what you've seen over the years and what you want to produce, and then you have five other people who have different ideas.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like anything. But no, I think what we're doing now is really good. So basically what I do for them is you know, I'll research different events like ride days, rallies, expos, and they could be anywhere from 100 people, like the Green River, to, you know, King of Hammers, which is 120,000 people.
Yeah,
so, but yeah, it's been really fun. Like, I've tried to kind of stay away from the travel since I've moved in here. They kind of set me up with you know, we'll have a team on the road. Hasn't really worked out like that just because certain people are old enough to do, you know, certain things as far as like driving certifications, different things like that, which is fine. Like, it's good now that I have a girlfriend with kids and stuff at home. It's a little harder to travel all the time.
I get that,
but we're slowly tapering back, so it's not bad.
Cool. Yeah, I remember I started a job I was really excited about. I was doing I was a salesman for a micro welder company. Okay. They did stuff for like aerospace applications, fine jewelry applications, and they would go to these shows for all these different industries. And the CEO, who was one of their best salesmen, he would be on the road for 36 weeks.
Oof.
I'm just like, I can't. Like, they wanted to send me out once a quarter for 2 weeks at a time. I'm like, still, that's a big chunk
single,
of time.
No dog, whatever.
No, I was newly married, and we had a kid on the way. So I was like, something's got to change. So things happen, but.
Yep. But, no, what I'm most excited for now is now that I have the opportunity to finally get another bike.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And get back at it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still traveling to some of these places that are really cool.
Yeah.
So
you can take that bike
with
you, maybe.
It's almost like it left my mind, you know, like riding. It's like, yes, you're around it and you're involved with it. And yeah, you can ride some of the company stuff in different places, but now like I can bring my bike to
these
places.
That's going
to
be so cool.
Oh yeah, it's exciting.
So are you picking up a brand new WR250F?
Yeah, 2023.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
good. I know, I'm like, it's been so long since I've had a bike. I'm getting a new one.
Yeah.
I'm not screwing around.
You've earned it.
Yeah. I'm not screwing around with some old bike with carb issues.
Somebody
and stuff
else's problem.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Oh, that's going to be so cool. I'm excited to see
it. I'm pumped. Yeah.
And you picked that up when?
This weekend, hopefully.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Where at?
From our helper
that's
dealership.
Right. You know that dealership.
Yep.
Well, that's got to be kind of cool because you probably get a better deal on it.
Yeah. Yeah. He hooked it up. I mean, it's still. It's weird. So. When I worked at the dealership, you get to see like how much you actually make off of certain units.
Mm-hmm.
Motorcycles, you don't make crap. So all
those
people beating up salesmen to get them down to like retail price, you suck.
Yeah.
You know, I've sold bikes just above cost, and you take home probably $20 to $50.
Oh, geez.
Off of that one unit, so you just spent all day
with that guy
to sell that bike.
Yeah, you spent 8 hours and
then he beat you up on price, and now you're taking home $50 off that bike.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's rough, dude. Yeah. That's why, like, I really appreciate guys like Kyle Lambert. Like, he pumps out units but it's because he's like such a genuine dude. People trust him.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, he gets some good deals, and yeah, it's people like that are impressive after selling dirt bikes and understanding how it all works.
Yeah,
it's wild.
Yeah, again, there's so much below the surface you just don't see that happens, and people are like, oh, they're taking up so much money, they're taking me for all this money. Like
that dude is
generally
like
generally no
Jordan Belfort off of Wolf of Wall Street. He could sell you literally anything. It's wild.
Yep.
But
so what are your plans for the future? Are you gonna stick with Rocky Mountain for a little while? Are you wanting to look on to other things? Or does this look like a career for a while?
Yeah, I really, really, really like it here. Like Dan and just management in general, my manager Trent Nelson, he's awesome. Yeah. He's just like, what do you need? Let's make it happen. And there's like no questions asked.
Yeah.
You know, as far as Rocky Mountain as a whole, like Dan stepped back and he basically didn't sell the company to another person for millions of dollars. He made it an employee-owned company.
Which is super cool.
Which is awesome. So like now I own stock just by default of being here. You know what I mean? Company barbecues, you know, like the little things like Christmas presents.
Christmas presents
and stuff. Like every year they do a huge giveaway, raffle giveaway to like Hawaii or like Australia, like wild stuff. It's a really good place to work.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty good company.
Yeah.
They try to take care of their employees.
Yeah, it's good stuff here for sure.
Man, that's
neat. And just the fact that they're like, you know, go ahead, like I know you can ride, go ahead and use the bike or use the UTV, you know.
I don't really want to beat on stuff, you know.
But yeah, it's still cool. Like what other company really let you do anything?
I was looking at that KRX 1000 in the four seater. I was like, geez, I would be so stoked to just go ride that for an hour.
Yeah.
Just even over in the hills behind Rocky Mountain. I don't care.
You should have heard Justin. He's our brands manager. I was with him at one of the GNCC rounds in South Carolina. I'm like, hey, so I kind of high-sided the EXE 500 out at King of Hammers.
Was that? I thought I heard about that.
No, you didn't. Anyway, high-sided the bike. You know, the bike really wasn't beat up. Like, I cracked the skid plate. You know, the heat shield for, like, bags and stuff was kind of beat up. Pipe was scratched a little bit. Trust me, I'm not, like, talking it down. Like, it was very minimal. Okay. My leg was more beat up than the bike.
Oh, shoot.
But, I was like, so, hey, I high-sided the bike. He's like, oh, yeah, we take that thing on trips all the time. You're fine. I'm like, you haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He didn't care.
He didn't even look at it. But, yeah, it was cool. He's just like, yeah, it's fine. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, man. Yep.
Man, now, what a lucky gig to be in.
If I blew that thing up, probably be a different conversation.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, but...
Just like that's coming out of your paycheck.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shoot.
Yep. But yeah, it's a cool gig for sure. You know, the people I work with are great. You know, it's we travel a lot with each other, so it's like a little family.
Yeah.
You know? We can all kind of get away from the corporate edge of things and kind of chill out and shit talk. And
that's cool.
Yeah, it's good.
So... going back to your new bike that you're going to get now.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of terrain are you going to get into? Because you're in Utah. Like, it's alpine and rocks.
I imagine I'm probably going to be riding with you guys most of the time.
Yeah.
In the back, way in the back.
Yeah, nah.
But, no, man, I want to hit everything. You know, like I said, I've hiked all over the Wasatch Front. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of little goat trails and stuff. I want to hit up there. Lots of single track I've seen that looks amazing. You know, Utah's the mecca. Like, you can be in high alpine, you can be in slick rock, you can be in desert, you can be in sand.
Yeah.
I want to do it all. Yeah.
Sweet.
Sure.
Yep. Yeah, well, I look forward to being able to go out and ride with you.
Yeah, dude.
That's going to be fun.
You might laugh a couple times.
No, dude, you should see
this. It's been so long. Like, I've been on bikes since, but not, like, consistently. And you know how it is, like... you start riding, and you feel a little comfortable, and then you ride way above your head, and then shit just starts happening. But
yeah, sometimes I feel like I get on the bike, and the first half an hour, it's like I haven't ridden a bike in 6 months.
I'm not saying I was fast back in the day, but I could definitely hold my own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you jump back on a bike after it's been so long and you still think you can ride like that.
Yeah.
You got to take yourself back to your
old level. Yeah.
For sure.
So, yeah, I gotta remind myself sometimes of like, okay, like, yeah. You gotta warm up. Yeah. You gotta let your body remember what you're doing
yeah.
here.
Stretch before and after. Yeah, hydrate. Yeah, all the things you didn't think about when you were a kid.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, especially getting older now. How old are you now?
I'm 28.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I got you by a decade, so.
I don't feel like that, though.
You feel like you're still
21? I feel
21.
Like I need to stretch before I go to bed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I gotta stretch before so I can get out of bed.
I might cough wrong, you know?
Right.
Throw a freaking rib out.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah, I have those days now.
I feel like that's all rough. Moto guys.
Well, in my head, I'm still 25.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
Yeah, moto guys inside are like 50.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the internals are like...
Yeah, I bend over to pick something up, and my knee like gets this pain. I'm like, oh, that wasn't there last week.
I remember that 2 years ago, climbing up that face. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, I still have like my third toe on my left foot. I basically fractured... in half when I dropped my bike from 4 feet up to the handlebar right on my toe.
Oh,
and I didn't have motocross boots on. I had like the Garnet Oil balance boots.
Well,
so there's nothing there. It's like I was wearing a tennis shoe. And I still feel it. Like if I'm in my boots for 8 hours, it starts to ache, man. And that was 3 years ago.
Oh, nice.
So, well, fun stuff.
You know, toes and fingers don't count.
Okay, so whatever.
You got to hide that one. I know it hurts, but you can't tell other people that.
All right. I broke my toe. Like, okay, that's great.
I know.
Try your arm or you're throwing your shoulder, breaking your shoulder or whatever. Thankfully, I haven't done any of that yet.
Yeah, I've been so lucky on the bike. Actually, like, I've had no surgeries, no broken bones. They've all been from stupid stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, collarbone, I fractured my hip.
What?
Did my toe. Yeah, from running, of all things. I was just full sprint. Trying to race my buddies, and my leg just caught a weird way, and I chipped off a piece of bone in my hip.
Just from the bone impacting
your
pelvis?
I have no idea,
dude. What?
I have no idea. I was just full sprint, boom, on the ground.
Wailing.
Ouch. Actually, I didn't even go to the doctors until like a month, 2 months later to get it checked out.
Because you could feel like a little pain.
Yeah, it was like I move a certain way, and it would like...
this little sharp pain.
Yeah. That's probably the weirdest one, but yeah, I've been so lucky, though.
Did they do anything for that?
No, calcium pills to just dissolve it. Yeah.
Oh, geez, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like quarter size just in my hip, yeah.
Just floating around in there.
Just floating around in there.
Mashed around.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
But yeah, I've been lucky. Hopefully, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Now trying some of this hard enduro stuff. I don't know. We'll see.
Your bike will do it because I know a guy, Kyle Meltzer, that he had a 250F for a while, and he was killing
it. I know the two-strokes are better.
I know.
And the tight, techie stuff, but we'll see.
This guy did it. He did 5 miles of hill on his 250F.
Wow.
Okay. So.
All right. No excuses then.
Fast, too. You get out on the whoops with that kid.
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap.
Nice.
You can't catch him. Cool. So, you'll be toasting people in no time.
It's wild. Like, you know, racing on tracks and motocross, you're just like, seeing that, you're like, wow, that's freaking gnarly. But I'm more scared of going through, like, trees and big rocks and stuff. I'm like, that stuff looks scary.
Yeah.
There's so many more things I feel like that can go wrong.
Yeah, and generally they do.
Yeah, exactly. As long as my bike's okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's just how well you can recover before you hit the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was listening to, I don't remember who it was, I want to say AJ Catanzaro,
mm-hmm.
and he was saying that even if you don't ride a motocross, that's not your discipline.
True.
Riding a track is really good because you get an opportunity to do it over and over again, and you repeat the habit.
Yep.
Or you repeat the maneuver until it becomes a habit.
Right. Yeah,
it's like, oh man, I should do that. But all of my trails, I should go do them in a loop. Make it like a track. So
do a section, come back down, do it again.
Yeah. But so many times when I go ride with people, it's like, we're going from A to B.
Yeah,
that's hard. It. And we get there as fast as we can. We're like, what did we pass? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be a good introductory to this stuff because my girlfriend has a 150F that I got her. And it's crazy. She's just like, when are we going riding?
Oh, she's excited.
So I can ride kind of at her pace, and then if there's some sections I want to screw around in, I can.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to go full board, even though I know for a fact in the back of my mind I'm going full board.
Yeah.
We'll see how long it lasts, but yeah,
cool,
hopefully
man.
I can try to just stay with her and ease into it a little bit.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
So
do you have, like, any stories of when stuff just went totally sideways at your events and you're like, holy crap.
I mean, there's been some really bad weather at a few. I think the worst one that sticks in my mind was we were out at Glamis, and we had warnings that and mind you, this is like my first ever activation event with Rocky Mountain, and it couldn't. I'm like, well, we can only go up from here, you know. But we got a warning on our phones. You know, you get those flash flood warnings or whatever. So this is like
at Glamis,
super crazy thunderstorm. Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you ever been out to Glamis. There's a little beach store, and then there's like a kind of vendor row area where it kind of slopes down off the road. So it's kind of like a little deep pocket flat spot. We all started getting warnings on our phone. Sky started to get dark. I'm like, oh shit, I don't know, what should we do? So we start kind of like tearing down, and like there's a lot of stuff that we bring out, like displays, product, and at this time we didn't have our box truck. We had a U-Haul. So like the U-Haul is already not supposed to be off-road.
Yeah.
Yeah, U-Haul if you're listening. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, so weather starts coming in, wind starts blowing. We have this big dome tent. It's getting yanked around. Like, the skeleton of this thing's twisting. Oh, no. And there's these clamps holding on the canvas to the skeleton. So I'm trying to get those off as it is pouring. It just starts torrential downpour, flash flood, you know. And it's great because the team I had at the time was just under the tent watching me do all this.
Nobody just jumped out and started to help.
There's a kid on my team. He helped a little bit, but for the most part, everybody was just watching me struggle while they stayed dry. It was great.
What?
Yeah. I yelled a few times, and then after they just stayed there, this is why this is awful in so many ways.
What? So
it starts pouring. Like, the ground is literally like 2 inches of water at this point. I'm still tearing down the tent. At this point, I'm just chucking the rest of it into the back of the U-Haul. I'm not trying to make it nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, flash floods are coming in. We get in the U-Haul. There's probably, I don't know, 6 to 8 inches of rain in this spot now. So it's all like just a miniature pond. And I'm hauling ass in the U-Haul trying not to get stuck.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, we made it out, but holy cow, it was bad.
It was Jeez.
So bad. Since then, knock on wood, there hasn't been anything that crazy. You know, we've had weather here and there, but we've anchored stuff down pretty
good. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, prepared for it a little bit better.
Man, but sometimes Mother Nature just reminds you, like, hey, I'm still in charge.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I know, seeing, like, stuff like Moab, like, they've had their flash floods, like, a year ago now.
Uh-huh.
Just watching that whole town be underwater. It was wild. Yeah. Pretty crazy.
It's nuts what'll happen around here, especially. Yeah. So, well, dang, man, I'm excited for your future. Like, I'm excited to go to some of these events too.
Yeah, yeah, so, for sure. We'll definitely see each other at Green River.
Yeah,
I'll have my bike out there. Hopefully, I can. We won't be bringing as much stuff, so I could probably close up shop and go ride.
Yeah,
be cool.
Yeah, come ride with us like at the end on Saturday or something.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That'd be great.
Yeah, man.
Well, Kyle, thanks for taking a minute and talking.
Yeah, dude. Super cool. Yeah, appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have a story of your own that you'd like to share or like to hear on the podcast, please reach out to me on Facebook, on Instagram, or send an email to thedirtbikejournals@gmail.com. And please like, share, subscribe, write a review about the Dirt Bike Journals so that it will continue to grow. Once again, thank you for listening. See you next time.